Next, our speaker is Juliet. Hi, I'm Juliet. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Juliet.
It's always an honor to speak at an AA meeting and a privilege to do service in AA, but it's really cool to be here at the legal anniversary meeting. I'm an alcoholic. I can't drink without getting extremely drunk and then my life becoming totally unmanageable as a result of my drinking. My last drink was on February 7th, 2005. I finally stopped drinking when I was 24 years old. But I came into AA when I just turned 20. And I spent my first couple of years in sobriety. I turned 21 in my second year, the first time I tried to get sober. And I remember, like, I was a city kid, you know, like, I was a New York City kid. I grew up in the Upper West Side, and I'd spent years, like, breaking into bars and clubs with those fake IDs I got on 42nd Street in the back of a smoke shop. And, like, when I got that driver's license that said I was 21 in the mail, I remember being like, fuck this. You know, when I showed up in AA, I didn't get it. I showed up, I was really physically sick. My first drink was in Cancun too. I was at Club Med on a family vacation in Cancun. And I grew up in New York City. I was a really sensitive kid. I was a really artistic kid. You know, I was born into this really wonderful family. My parents were both human rights activists, and they did really beautiful work that I deeply admired. They were both adult children of alcoholics, both suffered a fair amount of abuse from those alcoholic, rageaholic parents, both codependents, you know, a multitude of eating disorders. I mean, they were totally wacky, and they, like, effed me up kind of psychically in a really special way. But, like, they were also really fantastic people. You know, they had really strong values, and they raised me to believe that, like, we're here to help and love each other. And I was a really sensitive kid, and I really believed in that. And I desperately wanted to give of myself and to help people and to be kind and to be good. And, like, I remember being, like, 6, 7, 8 and, like, wanting to be good and wanting to be give of myself and, like, help people. And I made a lot of art. I started painting when I was, like, 7. And I remember trying to make really beautiful things that would make people feel good, or, like, give of myself, or be kind. And, like, I would also be so trapped in this, like, obsessive, self-centered cycle of, like, okay, I want to give, but I also want to make sure that everybody else makes me feel like I'm okay all the time. How do I get both? And, like, I could never get both. I could never, like, make sure that I was feeling good all the time, like, and give of myself freely. And I was, like, just, like, crying all the time as this really young kid, like, trying to figure out how to feel okay and, like, how to be good and, you know. And so when I had that first drink, and I wasn't necessarily so awkward. Like, I had friends, and, like, I figured out how to be cool, kind of. But I was just, like, always trapped in this really sick cycle of, like, me. Even though I, like, intellectually, like, desperately wanted to be good. And so when I had that first drink in Cancun, I snuck down to the bar. I was, like, 12, I think. Maybe I was about to turn 13, and I got a shot of tequila. And I felt amazing. You know, it's like we come to alcohol. Well, maybe we don't come here, like, seeking a spiritual experience, but that's what AA has given me. It's given me a spiritual experience. And I believe that the first time that I drank, I had kind of a low-grade version of a spiritual experience, because I felt this deep relief, and I felt okay, and I felt, honestly, really, like, loving and accepting of everything around me, like, everything was okay, and I found what I was looking for, and I partied, and I danced, and, like, everything was cool, and, like, right after that drink, I was like, that's great, give me more, and I drank until I puked and passed out every single night for the rest of that trip, and I figured it out really fast. Like, I figured it out that, like, the key was not to, like, constantly, like, drink and party until you throw up all over yourself so you get caught. The key was what I did, which was fill little Poland Spring bottles full of Absolut for my parents' liquor cabinet, and little Arizona iced tea bottles full of this wild turkey that I think was like my great grandfather's that they had in their liquor cabinet, because they didn't drink. They didn't really drink. And I would put it in my Jansport with my initials on it, and I'd walk up Columbus Avenue to school and with like a kilt on. I went to this like private school and we wore kilt, and like I would drink in the bathroom. Like I would take nips in between like social studies and math, and I would just keep that feeling. There's this amazing guy who speaks all the time, and I can never remember his name, but he does this thing. He's like, it was the four M's. First it was magic, then it was maintenance, then it was medicine, and then it was misery. And I'm always like, yeah. And it's so true. First, I was like, this is exactly what I've been missing. And immediately, it was like, maintenance. How do I keep this up? How do I keep it going? How do I keep the good feeling? And then, you know, fast forward, there's like, you know, a lot of stuff happened. I identify with a lot of what you had to say. I got shipped off to boarding school. You know, fast forward 2 years, I'm stealing, you know, hundreds of dollars a week from my dad, calling juniors, you know, like on his cell phone, which was like a brick at the time, you know, and like having him pull up in his town car on, you know, 85th and Central Park West. And I was like 14, and I would get in and I'd get some Coke and I'd get out and I'd go upstairs and I'd blow Coke off of like my like pink plastic desk, you know, and then I'd like go to eighth grade, you know, and then and that was my life, you know, and I would like party, and you know, like I would like dance on tabletops, and I would sneak into clubs, and I would go to bars. Still, I like to take things really, really far. Like even in sobriety today, I wake up after an AA dance with like low grade whiplash, you know, like I just like to take it really far. If I find like a green juice that I like, I need to buy like 30 of them and like figure out how to get them in bulk, you know, like I just. So I took things really far, and I got in trouble. I got drug tested. I faked them. I hurt myself trying to fake them because I would try to hide the drug samples. I mean, the urine samples that I wanted to keep cold in these like cool, random parts of the apartment. And at one point, I actually ended up pushing my hand through a window and cutting through four tendons in my left hand. Through this glass window, trying to hide my clean urine sample out on the ledge in early October, because I was like all cooked up, and I was like, that's the solution, to leave this urine sample out there and then blow Coke all night so that tomorrow when they, you know what I mean? Just like everything. I really don't even need to tell all the stories, but like, so fast forward, I made it through high school. I charmed my way through English and history classes, and I got D minuses in, you know, like science and math. And I didn't want to go to college yet. I wanted to be good and interesting, and so I drove to San Francisco, and I got a bunch of jobs in these cool human rights organizations. I was working for a political party during the 2000 election, and I was just unsupervised for the first time. So this maintenance drinking and this party drinking, like there was just no reason to like keep anything a secret anymore. There was no reason to hide it from anyone. So I just had a big old bottle of bourbon in the shower rack at like, you know, that I would start drinking at 6 o'clock in the morning before I started getting dressed for work. And then slowly I lost those jobs because I couldn't show up, and because I was acting really strange, and because, I was also just like a really crabby, I was like this very dual person. Like on one hand, I was just like full of love and like wanted to be kind to you and wanted to be kind to me. On the other hand, I was just like this crabby brat. And like, I don't know if any of you ever had this experience where like you're hanging out and like something happens, whatever it is, like the food takes a long time to come, or somebody's being loud in the movie theater, like whatever it is, you know, like it's too hot, it's too cold. And there's someone who's like, mammy, sure, this sucks. Mammy, sure, me, 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 me. And there's someone who's like, hey, you know, why don't we just try to enjoy ourselves? So I was the person always who was like, this sucks. And if you were the person who were like, why don't we just try to enjoy yourselves? It was like you had slapped me across the face with like a dead fish. I was like, who do you think you are to try to, you know, like steal my misery from me at this moment? You know what I mean? Like it was like I identified with this like, you know, grouchy, miserable state, unless I was at like the perfect kind of drunken high. But even that, it just stopped working. It was a very sad, slow, unsexy deterioration where I was like waking up in strange places, drinking more and more, working less and less, calling home, begging for money, saying I was depressed. And eventually what happened is I woke up, I was unable to hold on food for several months, and I started throwing up on a regular basis when I wasn't even drunk, just because the level of alcohol content in my system was so high, and I was eating small quantities of like rice and chicken broth just to get some sustenance. I wasn't drinking water. If I thought I was dehydrated, I'd put a cube in the Maker's Mark that day, and an ice cube. You know, and I was just sick, and I couldn't see, and I was listening to this Leonard Cohen record and this Dinah Washington record over and over and over again, and sitting in my windowsill in, like, a robe, and I was, like, 19, you know? I was just sad, you know? Like, I was, and I was working at this grocery store at one point, and, like, they fired me because my excuses about I went in, and I was like, and I was late so often, and I was always like, there was this squirrel, or there was this, like, butt, you know what I mean? And I had to get there at 1 p.m., and I was late, like, every time. And they were like, Juliet, we don't believe your excuses anymore. And I quit on the principle that I didn't want to work somewhere where I wasn't trusted. You know, like, and so I was, my life got small. I ended up taking a trip to Mexico. I woke up on the street in Mexico drinking an entire bottle of Cuervo Gold, having had sex with a complete stranger in a public alley in Cuernavaca. I had no idea if I had a disease, if I was pregnant, if I was going to be okay. I was, like, missing some clothing. This wasn't the first time this sort of thing had happened. It was definitely not even close to the first time this sort of thing had happened. And I was just finally scared. I was finally like, you know what, my life is unmanageable. And I, like, you know, crawled to a payphone in Mexican Cuernavaca. And I called my dad, collect, from this payphone. And I remember, like, shaking and crying in, like, the hot sun. And being like, Dad, I'm in Mexico. I can't stop drinking. I think the problem is drinking. I'm losing weight. I can't eat. I'm not okay. I feel like there's this monster living inside of me, and I don't know how to keep it from coming out, and I really need help. I don't know why I said that. And he's such a miracle. He'd been to Al-Anon because my oldest brother's in AA. I had no idea. He's been sober 32 years at the time. I had no idea. We didn't grow up in the same house. But he knew what to say. He said, you know, the most important thing is to not be ashamed and not be embarrassed, so that you can pick yourself up and get home as fast as you can so we can get you some help. And it was such an extraordinary thing to say at that moment. And I cried, and I said, okay, and I got off the phone, and within 20 minutes, I was at the nearest bar. It was called El Bohemio. It was about noon. And this is my moment of powerlessness that I return to when I think about my first step. I had just called begging for help, so scared, so sick, amazed that I still had all of my organs inside of my body, and I was physically shaking because, like you said, I have a physical allergy to alcohol. I can't stop drinking. I believe this is a biological disease. It's a spiritual sickness and a mental illness, but it's also like a biological disease. And once I put alcohol in me, I physically can't stop craving it. So I'm at the bar. I'm trying to get some bourbon into my system, but my whole body is repelling it. So I start retching and choking, and I keep trying for 20 minutes, and I can't get it down. So I get behind the bar, and I teach these bartenders how to make a white Russian so that it could go down with the cream. And that's how I made my way back to San Francisco, a slow IV drip of white Russian so that I could get, so I could pack, so I could get my life back together. And I got back to New York drinking because I couldn't do it any other way. And my brother was there to meet me. And he brought me to my first AA meeting, and I listened to these people talk, and they were all old people in Westchester, because my parents had moved up to Westchester by that time. Old people in Bedford, New York. And these women, these like old women, had their big books covered in newspaper because they didn't want anyone to see what it was. I didn't know what that meant at the time, you know, but like, you know, I was crying, and I was, like, frizzy, and I was, like, bloated, and, like, why not, you know, I was, like, you know, and I was, like, just crazy, and they were, like, do you want to stop drinking? And I was, like, yes, I want to stop drinking, you know, and they were, like, just sit there and listen, stop talking, just listen, you know, and I was, like, yeah, and, you know, and then I started going to meetings, you know, in New York City, and they were great. I went to meetings on the Upper West Side because I moved back in with my parents and I was just trying to get my life together. I got into college. I started going to college. I was living at home. Within 10 days of getting sober, I met my, at the time, drummer boyfriend who lived on the Lower East Side, who was like 8 years older than me. And I moved in with him like 2 weeks later. Yeah. Got a job working on a restaurant on Ludlow Street, moved in with this drummer, was like, okay. You know, needless to say, I did not really get involved with AA. You know, like I said, I turned 21 in those that first year and a half of just being dry. I went to a meeting like every 2 weeks. I did not get a sponsor. I did not crack the big book. I didn't even own a big book. I did not even read the steps on the wall. I kept going to this one meeting where I saw this guy who was in this movie that I really liked, and I thought it was cool that he was like famous and in AA. So I kept going back to kind of like semi-stalk him and just be like, I wonder if he's going to share. You know, like I wasn't really there, you know? And eventually my life just got shitty again, you know? Like I started drinking and my life just got really, really shitty again. And it wasn't so much as a physical bottom, even though I was ending up in dangerous places and I was in a new shitty codependent relationship living with some guy in this basement on Bank Street, and he was so mean to me, and he was and I was painting, and I was just like walking around in this like kimono with like takeout containers everywhere, like drinking and painting and hating myself and hating him and really not showing up for life. Thank you. And my life got really, really small. And I just like walked back into an AA meeting one day. It was really random. It was really random. And I walked in and I recognized a lot of faces, and everyone looked bright and shiny. And I met this woman who walked. I was 24 at the time, and I did not feel like a lady. I did not feel like a woman of grace and dignity. I did not feel like remotely an adult, and I was an adult. I was 24 years old. I was an adult, and I brushed my teeth like every 3 days. I ate like, you know, like one meal a day. I didn't know how to pay bills. I didn't know how to show up for things. I hadn't shown up for anything for my family like in years. I would like randomly show up like for like one. I would pick like one of the holidays and show up and like drink through the whole thing. And I didn't show up for either of my sister's first two children being born. I remember like I got a call. I didn't listen to the voicemail. Like a month later, I was like, oh, you had a kid, you know? Like it was really just all about me. And I still had these big ideals of like the kind of person I wanted to be in the world, and it was impossible for me to manifest because I was a slave to getting out of myself. I was a slave to this feeling of release, which had totally stopped working. I was not released from anything. I was just like bound by this addiction, and I didn't know how to stop. So I showed up at AA, and I was willing, and I met this woman. She walked into the room. She wore like outfits. She wore like outfits of like natural fibers, and like she like had this like nice haircut, and she like, you know, just sat very dignified, and she went to all the business meetings, and she like shared very clearly, and I just was like, she looks like she pays her Con Ed bill, you know? And we started working together, and she took me through the first step, and she told me to choose that moment that I had in Mexico, even though it was from my first bottom, because she thought it was such a clear outline of how alcohol was unmanageable for me, and she had me write that out and keep it in my wallet and like reference it if at any point in time while I was counting days I was like, like, you know, and the detox was really painful. And I remember like sitting up in bed watching TV until like 5 o'clock in the morning, wanting to take sleeping pills so I could sleep. She said, you're not allowed to. Once you're tired enough, you will fall asleep. And I waited up several nights and was like groggy through classes and eventually learned how to sleep without alcohol, without drugs. You know, I just started like eating like the crappiest food I could possibly eat just to like, you know, just like feel something, sugar, whatever. That lasted for a little while. You know, I went to a lot of meetings. I did what she told me to do. I started developing a relationship with a higher power. She had me meditate in Central Park for about half an hour every day. And I couldn't go anywhere without these headphones on, because when I would take the headphones out, if I wasn't talking or watching TV or reading a book, if I took the headphones out, I would think about the things that I had done and the people that I had hurt and how ashamed I was of myself. And I would like flush red, and I just like couldn't live with it. So the headphones had to be in at all times. So she would have me take the headphones out, and it started with like 30 seconds at a time. Okay, I can't take it. You know, and then it would be like a minute at a time. And then it would be like, finally, like 30 minutes at a time, I could like sit quietly without music and just be with myself. And that was like the first experience I had a relationship with my higher power, because these thoughts started to trickle in. Not like, oh my God, you're such a piece of shit. Oh my God, you're so worthless and useless. It was like, maybe it's going to be okay. Like maybe if I just don't drink, maybe if I do what these people are going to tell me to do, like maybe it's going to be okay. And like that's where it started for me. And so 7.5 years later, you know, I've like traveled all over the world in sobriety. I've gone to meetings on a bunch of different continents, had a few different jobs, graduated from a couple schools, I started my own business a few years ago, and that was a really challenging, scary thing to do in sobriety, but I'm still doing it, and I haven't quit yet, even though it's really painful, and I have to, like, face my, like, own self-loathing and anxiety on a regular basis. But AA has really helped me just keep showing up for myself. I have this amazing relationship with that same sister today, where my living amends to her is to show up for every soccer game that I can make it to for her kids, like every birthday that I can make it to, show up with presents, show up, be present. Like, I turn off my cell phone the second I get into her house, and I don't really turn it on until I leave, because I want to be there. I want to experience this love and this family. I've actually had the ability to, like, stop in sobriety at a few years sober and think, wow, okay, stop drinking. I stopped being a tornado in everyone's world. Who do I want to be? I know what I don't want to be. I know what I've stopped doing. Who do I want to be? There was this, like, magical vision I had of the person I wanted to be in the world and the contribution I wanted to make to society. Like, this is a bridge back to life. And I spent a few years coming to Never Had a Legal Drink and, like, hanging out and, like, going to the diner and, like, eating fries and chain smoking back where you could smoke in diners. That was amazing. I'm glad. Okay. I'm glad that we can't anymore, but it was also kind of amazing. Like, I did that for a few years, and I made friends. I made so many amazing friends in Alcoholics Anonymous that have become this, like, web of love and comfort and support. And when I, at, like, 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, oh my God, nothing's ever gonna work out for me, and I'm a useless piece of shit. There are, like, so many amazing people who are like, you know what? That's not true. And I'm like, okay, you know, it's great, you know? And people who've been sober so much longer than me that live this amazing life, and they really live in 10, 11, and 12 and work extraordinary programs, and they've shown me, like, how to do that. Like, they do it so I know how to do it and that it's possible, and it's so beautiful, and I don't really have to lie anymore, and I certainly don't have to steal anymore, and I've been gifted this, like, enormous ability to, like, love so much more honestly than I was able to when I showed up in these rooms. And, like, yeah, life has gotten a little bit shinier, but for me, the major gift is that when I'm talking to you, I actually care what you're saying. And that wasn't really the case when I came in. I was just thinking about myself, and now I have the opportunity for at least, like, half of the time be, like, thinking about you and, like, experience the miracle of, like, genuinely caring about another human being. Thanks.